Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's November the 16th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason in Kansas City at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Dave Dickey and I thank Jay Pierce and the rest of the WILL staff for so ably filling in our absence this week. Speaking of Dave, he managed to catch up with a bee specialist during an event the farm broadcasters like to call Trade Talk that happened yesterday. Dave will have a report on honeybee colony collapse disorder, and then I'll stay with a sweet subject. We'll hear from a Colorado sugar beet farmer. It all happens on this Friday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Well, let's take a look at how things closed today in the wheat pit in Kansas City. We saw the December contract down 12.5 to 774.5. March down 11 at 788.75. And in Chicago, December wheat down 16 at the close at 749.5. March down 16 at 770.5. May 755 down 13. December corn up 4.75, 379.5. March at 396.5. Up 4.75, May 406.25, up 4.5, and December 424.25, up 3.5. Soybeans for January ended up one lower at 1077.75, March down a half at 1093.75, May unchanged at 1098.25, November was up six at 1017, soybean meal for December 292.30, down 120, and December oil at 44.82, up 16. Mike Zuzolo joining us from Risk Management Commodities and Lafayette, Indiana, and good afternoon, Mike.
Hi again there, Jay.
Well, it seems like just a few hours ago we were talking to each other and looking at the crystal ball and figuring out what the commodities would do today based on the early opens. And did you see what you expected to?
Yeah, for the most part. You know, I will have to say we're pretty disappointed with the wheat market at face value because we did have a nice buy the past couple days on some weather and some talk that some end users were going to be coming in and buying some needs again. But when those export sales came out this morning and the December contract went below its 100-day moving average, we started to see a lot of those longs unwind their positions. At the late part of the session, Jay, it sounded like the fund selling was around 3,000 contracts of futures. But we did see a drier noontime model for the Southern Plains. Weather down there, they're expected to get some snow around the 21st and 22nd. Right now, though, the latest models say it's not going to hit very hard in the driest areas of the Southern Plains. Didn't help the price action at all today, but we're wondering whether that may not be more of an issue Sunday night if those models still look dry down there, because we have seen a lot of back and forth motion in the models, putting precip in, taking precip out. I guess one bright spot about the wheat was we didn't make a new weekly low, but we did close lower on the week by about 12.5 cents in the Dees futures. So July did not hold up there on the new crop side. We'd be looking for that if something was going to bounce next week on weather. It'd probably be the July. Still looking at those bear spreads is working at this point.
Mm-hmm. What about in the corn pits? Were those export numbers that came out the reason that we were up at least a bit today?
Yeah, for the most part, it's interesting because this week was really a range-making week, and we think that's probably the way it's going to be next week. We're going to watch the outside markets because it seems as though on Thanksgiving holiday week, the things really taper off because you've got light trading days both before and after the actual holiday. But Dees corn itself locked itself kind of in a range, 385, 386 is a resistance, 373, 375 is the support. Very key resistance and support lines, Jay, we would say. We had the bullish beans and the export demand and the export sales you're talking about today working in favor of the corn, but it was offset by the weaker wheat trade and the gold, which was down, again, like we talked about this morning, well over 5% for the week. Dees gold is an interesting chart right now because we violated a long-term support line in the Dees contract. We tested that support line today, and it failed to go back up above it. So we've kind of confirmed a top, technically speaking, in the gold, at least for this week. So that's something we'll have to be watching next week, and when we saw that happen, we went over and looked at some of the key commodity index chart technicals, like the Goldman Sachs Commodity Index, the Dow AIG, and the Morgan Stanley. Those are the top three we watch as far as the indexes. Many of those are looking very, very overbought. In some cases, some of them are looking very, very toppy from a technical perspective, especially on the weekly charts.
Mm-hmm. Soybean pit, we just kind of, out in the November 08 contract, we saw some increase, but otherwise not a lot to, you know, kind of a tight range right around, unchanged for May, January, down just 1.5 lower on March.
Yeah, it looked like good old-fashioned profit-taking at the end of the week, especially led by the meal pit, which had been the real runner of the product market this week on processor buying and end-user needs being covered. So the meal just seemed like it wanted to take a break and take some money off the table. Dees meal almost breaking to that 300 level this week, so that's pretty important to watch when we come back next week. I think the other thing the beans had going for them this week was the seasonality that they were able to offset. Normally when November beans go off the board, they tend to expire on the low end of the range, and this is the first year since 2003 that when we went back and looked at the November-only charts, that the NOV expired at the top end of the range, and that gave the traders a lot of gusto earlier on. But again, we probably saw a little bit of profit-taking. Probably the biggest thing to watch for beans goes back to China and their supply and demand, and also the Brazilian production potential. Those seem to be the two biggest question marks out there as far as fundamental goes, as far as the actual fund trading goes, and whether funds go ahead and pull money out or put more money in. It really boils down a lot to that currency trade, especially the dollar and the Brazilian real and that spread. That's been jerking around a lot. The Brazilian central bank has been buying dollars, but all that does for the currency traders is tell them that they're right, and so they keep pressuring the dollar. So that's something we're going to have to keep on, especially as we get into the holidays. When a lot of things happen at the end of the year, it seems like, in the currency markets.
Okay. So what are you expecting for Monday? It's going to be a kind of a chopped-up week, with Thursday being the Thanksgiving holiday, and I guess a half day of trading on Friday afterwards.
Yeah, you've got partial days Wednesday and Friday.
Wednesday and Friday.
Yeah, and so you're looking at a situation where they're going to probably try and keep, as far as the beans go, try and keep this rally and this momentum build up as much as they can. But if you start to see the gravity take effect because of lack of trade, as overbought as we are right now in some of these daily charts, Jay, I guess if I had to make a guess or poke at it, I would say if you can't keep the momentum build up in the first day, like Monday and Tuesday morning, then you'll probably see gravity take effect on thinning volatility and thinning volume, and some of these overbought technicals, guys just going ahead and shutting down for the week.
Mike, thank you very much, and you have a good weekend. You and your family have a great holiday, because I guess we won't talk to you next Friday. It's going to be kind of an abbreviated market stay here at WILL, too.
You too, Jay. Happy Thanksgiving to all you, to you and all the listeners out there.
Great. Thanks, Mike Susilo from Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll take a look at agricultural weather with the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, Steve Hilberg. AM580's Mike Sola is forecasting for Illinois and Indiana tonight. West, in the north, I should say, mostly cloudy. Central sections, partly to mostly cloudy. And in the south, partly cloudy. And lows ranging between 31 and 37. Tomorrow in the north and in central Indiana, cloudy with scattered showers of light rain and snow. In central Illinois and in southern Indiana, mostly cloudy. Southern Illinois, still partly to mostly sunny. Highs will range from 42 in northeast Indiana to near 60 in far southern Illinois.
I'm Todd Gleason in Kansas City at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. Coming up, a conversation I held with Alan Welp, VP of the American Sugar Beet Growers. Just a couple quick reminders. Please visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Next, Alan Welp, We started out by asking him about his Colorado farm.
I'm a sugar beet grower. I also raise corn, dry land wheat, and dry edible beans, and also have a feedlot where I fatten cattle.
Let's talk a little bit about farm policy. I would think that you might feel under the gun pretty good this year, that most of the Midwest had said, let's take a look at those commodities which we refer to as the white commodities, sugar, milk, rice, a couple of others, and said those are the problem areas that we need to clean up, that we need to maybe get rid of some government policies. And on the other hand, you're a corn grower as well. How did you view all of that coming out of the Midwest as a sugar beet grower to begin with?
The sugar beet policy that the House of Representatives has come out of their committee with, we support very much so. It's a very good policy. It's good for the consumers. It's good for the taxpayers. And it's very good for our producers. It offers a stable supply of sugar at a stable prices for both the consumer and the producers.
Yeah, but doesn't that policy, once we get to January of this year and you open the market up, won't that policy potentially cause a great deal of money to have to be put into subsidizing sugar in the United States?
There is that potential with the open trade with Mexico starting 2008. The policy that has moved forward out of the House of Representatives into the Senate will give our growers 85% of the domestic market. And we need to manage our supply and demand. We're having a balanced market in the United States. You know, we'd love to work with Mexico so that we can do that on a North American basis.
How much on your farm, and just give me percentages on gross income or net income, let's do net income, comes from the different commodities. How do you divide it up? I'm trying to get a feel for where you stand in these issues on corn and sugar and beef production.
On my farm, probably 30% comes from sugar beets, 30 to 40% of corn. Wheat would be about another 20%, and then my cattle business would take care of the rest.
Can we talk about production just a little bit on sugar beet and corn? I'm interested to know what kind of soils you have, if there are different soil types that are better for corn on your farms as opposed to sugar beet, what rainfall is like, whether you have to irrigate some of those crops or not.
Northeastern Colorado, to raise, we are a huge irrigation area. The sugar beets need to be irrigated, and most of our corn is irrigated as well. We also raise some dry land corn and dry land wheat. But the irrigation, the soils, we use corn as a crop, and we follow that with sugar beets. Sugar beets, because of the diseases, we can only raise once every 4 years on our land. So we rotate that in with corn and dry edible beans.
And so what's the rotation look like? So every fourth year you're in sugar beets, you're in corn 2 years and dry edible beans one potentially, or how does the rotation work?
Every grower has his own rotation. You know, some of my fields were 3 years of corn and 1 year beets. Some of them are 2 years of corn or 1 year corn, dry edible beans, and then a wheat, irrigated wheat, and then back to beets. It all depends on each individual's circumstances and the soil he has and the amount of irrigation water that you have.
Farmers in the Midwest where we are grow two things, corn, soybeans. Wheat when the price is high. In the southern part of Illinois, a lot of soft red winter wheat. They're always looking at per acre generation of dollars. Which crop generates the most dollars per acre?
It varies due to the market price and to the yield. Previously, sugar beets has generated higher dollars per acre. With the higher price of corn we have today and the lower price of sugar, corn's going to generate more dollars per acre.
Which is the most labor-intensive crop?
Sugar beets are very labor-intensive.
I don't know how a sugar beet growing season progresses. Can you walk me through it, please?
Well, you normally plant the first week in April. And beets are very difficult to establish a stand. So a lot of effort is with irrigation management to establish a stand. And then we control weeds. Weeds are a big factor. You know, that takes a lot of hand labor to control weeds. And then in October is when we harvest. In eastern Colorado, harvest starts the 9th of October. And we try to have all of the crop out within 2 weeks.
Tell me about the machinery that it takes to do sugar beets as opposed to corn, and if there are anything that you can use is the same. I'm guessing because sugar beets are underground, probably not, but you can tell me.
As far as planting, the same equipment as a corn planter, just, you know, you change it over to plant the beets. Harvesting, a huge difference. You got to have a what we call a digger or a lifter loader, which pulls the beets out of the ground, and then it cleans them up, you know, knocks all the as much dirt off, and then you've got to haul all that to a receiving station where they are piled and stored until the processing factory can handle them. And the growers own our own factories. The sugar beet industry nationwide is now grower-owned. It's 100% grower-owned, where in order to raise sugar beets, you got to be a shareholder of your cooperative.
Interesting on that part. How long ago did that come about?
There's been parts up in the Red River Valley where the growers have owned their facilities for 25 years. A lot of the co-ops, since the inception of the 2002 Farm Bill, there's just not enough room for company management, company ownership. There's not enough margin. So since the 2002 Farm Bill has enabled the growers to own their own facilities.
So one other quick question. The digger is an implement you pull behind your tractor, and then you dump into a semi or something else that you could haul corn in just as easily?
Absolutely. It takes a little bit different trailer on your semi. You can't just use a grain trailer. You got to have like either a live bottom or a back dump to offload the beets.
Simply because it's a tuber, it's a big. it's sugar beets are big actually. How big do they get by the time you harvest them?
Well, there's a lot of 10, 12 pound beets. They'll get the big ones will get 12 inches in diameter and about 12 inches long. But you got a lot of smaller ones. You got all shapes and sizes. Sugar beet harvest is just very enjoyable. It's at a fast and furious pace. Takes a lot of people, a lot of labor, a lot of machinery. But it goes in a hurry.
Alan, we appreciate you being with us.
You bet. Thank you very much.
Alan Welp is a sugar beet grower out of Rye, Colorado. I'm Todd Gleason at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. Well, up next, colony collapse disorder is a growing problem in the United States. CCD has resulted in a loss between an estimated of 50 and 90% of the colonies in beekeeping operations nationwide. AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey reports on the latest research into CCD and its economic impact.
In colony collapse disorder, honeybee colonies unaccountably lose all other worker bees. A team of scientists from the Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health, Pennsylvania State University, and the USDA Agricultural Research Service have found what they believe is a connection between Israeli acute paralysis virus and colony collapse disorder. Lisa Jagger is Industry Service Director for the National Honey Board.
There's a group of researchers on the East Coast trying to figure out what is causing colony collapse disorder, and we actually have given them some funding, a couple hundred thousand dollars, and other groups them some funding as well to try to figure out the cause. What they have found, they're finding a virus that's located in the hives affected by colony collapse disorder that is not being found in healthy hives. So that's where they are right now. They're going to take the colonies where they have found the virus and do further tests, because they don't necessarily think that the virus itself is causing colony collapse disorder. And, you know, you get into the scientific details of it. And so what they'll do is just do further tests on those disease colonies to try to figure out what else besides the virus might be going on.
IAPV was first detected 3 years ago when infected Israeli bees grew shriveled wings before eventually suffering paralysis and dying just outside of the hive. Bees play an essential role in the world food supply and are needed for the pollination of over 90 fruit and vegetable crops. The economic value of these agricultural products in the U.S. is estimated at $14.6 billion a year. Jagger says in early 2008, the issue could come to a head among California almond growers.
Well, that might be the case. It's early yet in the season. Pollination won't actually take place now for a couple of months. But this is the time of year when beekeepers ship their bees from all over the country to California to pollinate the almond crop. And because almond consumption has been going up so dramatically for the last few years, the need for more bees keeps increasing, and people are expecting there might be a shortage this year due to colony collapse disorder.
Of the 2.4 million colonies of bees in the U.S., the almond crop in California alone requires 1.3 million, and the need is projected to increase significantly over the next few years. The Almond Board of California projects that by 2012, nearly 90% of the hives now estimated to exist in the U.S. will be needed to pollinate California's almond groves. Earlier this year, USDA unveiled an action plan to deal with CCD. The strategy has four components: survey and data collection, analysis of samples, hypothesis-driven research, and mitigation and preventive action. This is Dave Dickey, AM 580 Agriculture.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
And now it's time to take a look at our cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company, Ludlow, Illinois. Bruce is the general manager of the co-op's 70 central Illinois locations. Good afternoon, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Well, as we wrap up this week, what are you looking at in terms of basis?
We've seen some improvement through the course of the week. If you look at central Illinois processor numbers, corn has been steady over the last week, but we picked up 5 cents on beans. Down at the Gulf, the CIF on corn's been up 3 cents. Beans tad bit weaker, 1-4 down on the CIF, but that's in the face of some pretty stiff movement out here. You know, a week or two ago, we did see a little bit of processor looking around for some soybeans, but I think on the scale up, they have probably bought quite a bit. I know we have. Farmer has been good, disciplined sellers on the scale up here.
Mm-hmm. So how is processor demand?
I would say pretty decent processor demand, you know, corn and soybeans both. We had the crush numbers out a little bit earlier this week. Mm-hmm. Export sales continued to have very, very good exports again on the report out. So when that continues, that's keeping the CIF demand up for both barge and rail. Cash movement seems to be mostly a situation of moving January right now. We're buying Jan corn, we're buying new crop corn, but nothing in the hole here, and that's kind of brought the nearby basis up some and kind of taken some of this carry that we've seen out of the market.
All right, and your prices today?
In Paxton tonight, we're at 372 on nearby corn, new crop at 394. Beans at 1044 nearby, and new crop at 978.
All right. Bruce, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard, and he is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois. In a couple of minutes, we'll look at the agricultural weather with Steve Hilberg, but first, AM 580 News, and here is Jim Meadows.
Thank you, Jay. And looking at the news, Urbana Middle School was put on lockdown today after a teacher found a note with an unspecified bomb threat on it. Students were kept in their classrooms. While school officials and police searched the building, nothing suspicious was found, and classes returned to normal schedule this afternoon. A District 116 spokesman says they take all threats seriously. Clerical workers at the University of Illinois will vote this coming Tuesday on a tentative contract agreement. Negotiators for AFSCME Local 3700 and the administration settled on the agreement just over a week ago. U of I clerical workers have been without a contract since August. A lawyer for Terre Haute Mayor Kevin Burke says the Republican candidate who beat him in last week's election may have violated the Hatch Act, which prohibits political activities by federal workers. Mayor-elect Duke Bennett works for Terre Haute-based Hamilton Center. According to a website that monitors government spending, the center has received almost $5 million from the federal government for its Head Start program. Bennett's attorney says Bennett had no connection to the Head Start program and did not handle the funding or supervise anyone receiving that federal money. Governor Mitch Daniels says Indiana expects to have $56 million available to help needy residents with their heating bills this winter. This year, Vectren, Citizens Gas, and the Northern Indiana Public Service Company will launch an effort to using their own money to provide about $2 million in additional aid. A survey of rural bankers suggests the Midwest will see slow economic growth in the coming months. Nearly half the bankers agree that ethanol production is having a positive effect on the region's economy. The survey includes Illinois, Iowa, Missouri, and several other states. The current Champaign Public Library building will hold its last day of operations December 9th. It's closing to make way for the opening of the new and larger library building next door on January 6th. The one-month period in between will be used to move materials to the new building and tear down the old one. During that time, patrons can use the Douglas Branch Library on Grove Street and pick up reserved materials from the Bookmobile, which will be stationed at the library parking lot Monday through Saturday afternoons. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
And I'm Jay Pierce. This is the Closing Market Report on AM 580 WILL. Not hooking up with Steve Hilberg right now, but we will have his weekly summary as a part of Commodity Week, of course, tomorrow morning at 11:30. We'll take a look at AM 580 meteorologist Ed Kieser's forecast for the two states tonight. In the north, mostly cloudy. Central sections partly to mostly cloudy, and in the south, partly cloudy. Lows will range from between 31 and 37. Tomorrow in the north and in central Indiana, cloudy with scattered showers of light rain and snow. And in central Illinois and southern Indiana, mostly cloudy. Southern Illinois, partly to mostly sunny, with a high ranging from 42 in northeastern Indiana to near 60 in far southern Illinois. Now, tomorrow, the wind speed should be 7 to 14 miles an hour, and the minimum afternoon relative humidity ranging between 45% in the south and 75% in northeastern Indiana. Dry weather is expected Sunday and Monday. Rain will arrive Monday night into Tuesday and will occur off and on through Wednesday. Colder weather is expected Thanksgiving through the morning that follows, and some light snow showers and flurries will be possible Wednesday night and again on Thanksgiving Day. Well, that's the Closing Market Report for Todd Gleason. I'm Jay Pierce. Remember, join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week, our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. Todd will be doing it from the National Association of Farm Broadcasters Convention in Kansas City. And our guests here in studio will be Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and Bridget Chenoweth of AgriVisor. Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises will be the guest on the program. And that's Commodity Week. You'll hear it tomorrow morning at 11:30 here on AM 580. And, of course, you can find all of our ag information, get podcasts, etc. at willag.org.